Hi, Brickies. I'm Dominic, the last one standing with a kink for cannibalism.
And I'm Kate, the resident phobia expert who also hears voices.
And you're listening to Shittin' Bricks,
a podcast where we talk shit about stuff that scares us,
ripping a few laughs and survival tips along the way.
As always, please subscribe, rate and review us. And don't forget to follow us on the socials at Shittin' Bricks Podcast.
Like the morning after a night on the curries and cans, here it comes. So drop your dacks, pop a squat, and let's get into it.
I just don't do it when we're being funny.
Do you know?
We won't post.
Yeah. And do you know TikTok shuts down people that vape?
Do they?
Yeah. Well, you can't vape on a live stream. Just
yeah.
FYI. Hey, welcome to Shitting Bricks Podcast and Vaping 101.
Welcome to the PSA, the TikTok PSA line. We're taking your calls live. Please don't hesitate to give us a ring. It's 131 Tink Tonk.
131166. 131166. 131166.
No, it's 1330 32.
Yeah, what was that one?
Lube-mobile. Yeah. Call 1330 32.
The Google Mobile.
Oh, G-O. G-G-O.
Okay. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Dom.
Welcome to Memory Lane of Australian Jingles.
Absolutely. Welcome to the throwback station.
Yeah, we're pivoting from Shitting Bricks into
We're going to pivot. We're pivoting. Pivot. Oh, my God. The reason I said pivot is because because there's some freaking meme online, which is just the funniest thing of all time. And if you haven't seen it, you must. And it's the characters from Friends, but someone has like, you know, turned them into like put the face thing on them. And it's just like, I'll post some, but it's just like, oh my God, too funny. And Pivot was one of them. And then his catchphrase is, "How are you doing it?"
How are you doing it? It.
But I imagine he just says it like, "How are you doing it?"
Yeah. Kind of like Terminator.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Kate, people have been wondering and waiting because we never posted the results, which Michael Douglas picture won.
Well, we had some really good feedback about how the one around, like, in the mouth was, like, a bit closed off and a bit, a little bit too pensive. So I think it's got to be the hand on chest. So I've loaded both up because I like iPhone's feature of you can just switch whatever wallpapers you want when you feel like it.
Oh.
So I've actually loaded both up. So it just depends on how I feel. So, like, I maybe do, like, a Monday, Wednesday hand on mouth. And then I do like a Thursday to Saturday, hand on chest. And then maybe a Sunday I'll like flip it up and just have like a picture of me and my beautiful puppy dog, which I love.
You got a puppy?
No, I used to. Well, Austin. Yeah. So I have my cute little one of him. And he's lying on me and he's so sweet.
Oh,
he's
the cutest, so cute.
Boy. Austin. Just nice. We do. He's such a sweet boy. But he's chasing lots of tennis balls up in the Rainbow Bridge now, so that's good.
Yeah. All right, Kate, we've got so much to get through today. It is a jam-packed episode because
jam, jelly, jam.
Shake. Mm-mm. But before we get into the kind of semi-part two of my most recent travels, we've got to do a little bit of housekeeping.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, I'm getting better at going low.
That was a really nice, like, minor key note.
Cool.
I like it.
I'm getting
the drama
better
of the episode.
All right. Well, as usual, please go check out all of our socials at shitting.bricks.podcast. Tiki Toki's Instagram, they're our favorites.
Yes.
Yes. While you're at it, you should definitely check out our Patreon, which again, it's shitting.bricks.podcast. A couple bucks a month, get early access to all of our episodes. And when we start doing live shows and more merch and all that cool, fun shit, you'll be like part of the insider gang. So you should do that while you're at it.
Totally.
Yeah. And what are we really focused on this year, Kate?
We are focused on 5 stars for being just a 5-star group. Are we 2.5 stars each? I think maybe it adjusts from time to time. Today I feel like, and I was just having a big D&M with Dom, some free therapy before this session, which I adore. And I feel a little bit almost like a 1.5 to 2 star today. So, Dom, I know you're going to bring the additional 3 to 3.5 stars.
Okay.
Regardless.
I'm a star filler. I can do
you
that.
I'll
bring up. Inflation is a bitch at the moment.
Oh, my God. The cost of living. Can you stand it?
Oh, my goodness. We sound like millennials. I love it.
Oh, we do. I know. So bad.
Yeah. So, yes, as Kate said, all this year we're really focused on more rating and reviews. So at the end of this episode, please just stick around whatever streaming service you're using because we're on all of them, all. Just give us like 5 stars and we'll be ever so grateful.
Yes, please.
Yes. And if you ever want to get in touch with us, like Kate and I sit at our computers waiting to hear from you. So if you ever want to, you know, say hey, have some constructive feedback or just have some questions or maybe a story, just email us at shitten.bricks.podcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please.
And last but not least, we are featuring
A frog in my throat. Or 13, 30, 32.
Oh, frog in my throat. Sorry, folks. I'm fighting off a cold. We are going to feature the Certainly Strange podcast from our BooPod network and the amazing Anemone. Kate, do you remember Anemone?
I do.
Yeah. Best host ever of a podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Certainly Strange podcast. It's part of the BooPod network. You should go check it out right now. It's on all the streaming services. And it's just the most bizarre collection of really strange, weird stories from around the world. And it's fascinating.
We love to hear it.
Attempted murder on a ghost, cursed paintings burning houses down, and lighthouse keepers disappearing without a trace. The world is filled with astonishing stories that will make you go and shrug, saying, well, I don't know what's going on here, but it is certainly strange. My podcast, Certainly Strange, is a collection of these bizarre tales. Each episode I tell a separate story and share my own unfiltered opinions and theories about it. If this sounds interesting to you, come and join me on this journey through the strangest parts of our history.
Yeah, and Anemone, like best name ever.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me think of the joke that Nemo's dad tries to tell in Finding Nemo.
Yeah, do you remember it?
No, because he messes it up too. He's like, there was a sea cucumber and an enemy. Can't do it.
And a clownfish. Was the clownfish funny?
Yeah, the clownfish. and the mollusk. The mollusk says to the sea cucumber, that's it. So I think I told it about the same as he did.
Yeah.
Bless you, Marlon.
Yes, bless you, Marlon. All right, folks, that is the end of
the episode. Thanks for joining.
How's it going?
It's not the end of the episode, guys. We're just beginning.
Yes.
Get settled. I threw you off. Joke.
Yeah, thank you for sticking around.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, I hope they gave us 5 stars.
Same. Got them.
Okay, 8 minutes on the dot. Maybe we should just move our limit to 8 minutes now that we're doing BooPod Network features. I think that's fair.
I think that's fair. Sure. I think it's our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
Absolutely. But let's get to the business, shall we?
Let's get down to brass tacks.
Yes, whatever that saying means.
I'll find out.
Yep, Kate's going to look that up while I intro what this week's episode is. And as you probably know because you clicked on it, it is called The City of Anarchy.
Ooh. Anarchy.
Yeah.
Anarchy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's one name of it, and probably a name we shouldn't really use, you know, too often, just because it does have some bias involved. But the other name you may have heard it is called the Kowloon Walled City.
Oh.
Yeah. Kowloon is a sort of prefecture of Hong Kong, which is the other place that I visited after we went to the Philippines most recently.
Know Kowloon Bay from Tomorrow Never Dies.
There you
go. The James Bond film. Because they do feature a lot of those places there. Just before you begin, Dom, brass tacks.
Sure.
We like to teach our listeners.
We do.
The origin of the first phrase, dating back from the late 1800s, is disputed, but some believe that it alludes to the brass tacks used under fine upholstery. Others say that it's a Cockney rhyming slang for hard facts. And still others allude to tacks hammered into a sales counter to indicate a precise measuring point. So you'd imagine that brass tacks are underneath the upholstery of a chair. So they're like, let's get down to brass tacks.
Sure.
Or let's get down to hard facts. That's a classic almost Australian thing too, where, yeah, hit the frog and toad, dead horse, blah, blah. Let's get down to brass tacks.
I really like that. Thank you, Kate, for teaching us.
Welcome.
Thanks, Mrs. Wilkinson, Miss Wilkinson.
I mean, you could be Mrs. Who's who am I to know?
She could have got married in Vegas.
I could have.
Okay, so like last week's episode where I did a feature story on the Philippines, another fabulous country that I got to so from a place of privilege recently visit, Kane and I decided to, instead of spending another 7 days in the Philippines, because it's a bit quiet and Kane and I can't sit still, we got to go see shit and do shit.
Yep.
And shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good thing to do with it.
It is. We thought we'd go visit some friends of ours, Rupert and Jimmy, though Jimmy hadn't actually landed there yet, who had just moved to Hong Kong.
Wow. Which is a city. Exciting.
Yep. If you did not know. I'm not going to give like a geographical education piece on this particular one because I'm assuming most people know that Hong Kong is a city, China,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
Most people, wink, not
wink.
Me because I don't do geography.
Well, all I will say is everyone should go visit Hong Kong and the sooner the better because since recent handovers and, yeah, all the political stuff that's involved, which is way too big a story for me to do in at least 1 hour. It's like mega city. It's New York City, like bigger scale size, so many people.
Mm.
It's beautiful. Coffee shops, art, culture, history, nature, everything.
Amazing.
It's really, really cool.
I think we need a spin-off pod of our travel stories.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. But Kate, to get into this week's story, which is the City of Anarchy.
Yep, I have already taken my pants off. Is that one of the requirements?
Fabulous. It's
great.
Pants optional Tuesdays.
Always.
Before we get into my story, I've said that 6 times already, but I will have a question for you, Kate, and then you got to try and guess what mine is as well.
Okay.
What's your favorite genre of film or movie?
Ooh. That's a great, great question. I am a big fan of 1980s Michael Douglas, but
yes.
I'm a big fan of like crime thrillers,
mm-hmm.
particularly around the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, things like The Firm, things like, all of the classics, which are escaping my mind at the moment, but that genre in itself. Like I watched Seven the other night,
sure.
Classic David Fincher,
yep.
Thrillery, you know, bit kooky, bit weird. Sucker for one of those. Love them.
Okay, and what do you think my favourite is?
I think your favourite is sci-fi.
Yeah, you're pretty close.
Okay.
It's my second, and it's just my second. And it would have been my first, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago, but
mm-hmm.
more recently, and I don't know if it's because I've gotten older, but I'm really into post-apocalyptic anything,
Ooh.
Dystopian anything, from
nice.
Like 12 Monkeys to, you know, The Walking Dead, Last of Us, which I'm sure everyone that listens to this podcast has probably watched.
Except for me, but I have it on my list for my school holidays. I'm going to binge it.
Absolutely. So my favorite genre, at least for the moment, is any sort of movie that's end of the world-ish, the world has come to an end, or at least the world that we know, there's no law, it's all about survival. And that's what's inspired this week's episode.
I love that. Do you know what I just watched recently, which I'd never seen and I really, really loved, was the two films that Emily Blunt and John Krasinski did where
Quiet Place.
The Quiet Place. Thank you. I was trying to think of the title. I'm all ass about today. I can't think of anything straight. But I that worked really well.
There we go. She's tits up, ass out.
Tits up, ass out. Classic Tuesday. Now, I loved those. Mm. I thought they were excellent. And that's got that sort of vibe. It is about, you know, monsters / alien type deals. But it has that where, yeah, it's about the survival. And it makes me really think, yeah, like what would I do? Tomorrow when the war began type scenario.
Yeah. That's my thing. So obviously that genre can go down that sci-fi route.
Yes. Of course. It can straddle the line.
But it also doesn't necessarily have to. And that's where I'm really fascinated by the human condition. What do humans do when the laws have all broken down or the rules don't apply? Lord of the Flies type thing. So while I was in Hong Kong, I visited this place and I learned of this story, and I had heard little rumblings of it up until my trip. But while I was there, I got to go experience it firsthand. And it's just, it's like a thing that Dominic should know all about. It's just classic.
So exciting. And the fact that you visited and went. Okay. Well, I can't wait. This is going to be great.
So City of Anarchy, or Kowloon Walled City, this is a quick introduction, was a densely populated and largely ungoverned enclave of China within the boundaries of Kowloon City, or British Hong Kong. So Hong Kong at one point was colonized, managed, governed is the best word, by the British. So the Kowloon Walled City was built originally as an Imperial Chinese military fort, and the walled city became a de jure, which means like pretty much no law.
Right.
Enclave after the new territories were leased to the United Kingdom in 1898, so quite a ways back. Its population increased dramatically after the end of the Japanese occupation of Hong Kong during World War II, attracting mostly refugees fleeing the renewed Chinese Civil War. Now, by 1990, the walled city contained 50,000 residents within its territory of 2.6 hectares, which is only 6.4 acres, Kate.
50,000 people.
50,000 people living solely in a 2.6 hectare piece of land.
That's not much either. That's not many tennis courts. So we've done this. We've done these measurements before. That's only, maybe like 10 NFL fields.
Maybe. It ain't a lot. It's only it's a little much. Bit bigger than La La, okay?
What? Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. Gee whiz, I would not deal with that. I need my own personal space. I need an ensuite.
Story, Kate, and people can do this too, we're going to feature photos on our socials, so look out for it. But if you want to look it up on your phone as I tell this story, just you need to visually picture this.
Okay.
It's intense. Now, from the 1950s to the 1970s, it was controlled by local triads and had high rates of prostitution, gambling, and drug abuse. In January 1987, great year, Kate, the Hong Kong government announced plans to demolish the walled city, and after an arduous eviction process and the transfer of de jure sovereignty from the enclave from China to Britain, demolition began in March 1993 and was completed in April 1994.
Oh my God. Okay, Dom, I just need to pause you because I've just looked up the pictures of it. So you've said walled city. So I immediately thought there was a wall around the city and there was a whole bunch of people in tents in a big, in a field.
No.
This is, so the walls are the homes, are the buildings. So imagine like 20 shipping containers stacked on top of each other and then spread that out by a width of like 100. And that's what this is. It is literally on top of, on top of, on top of, on top of, on top of little tiny apartments, which I can only imagine would have been a delight in terms of sanitation and poop removal and hygiene. Not suggesting that people aren't hygienic, but in just in terms of the sheer size of this. Wow. This is an actual fear. This is an actual fear of mine. This is a great story to tell. I feel sick. Okay.
Now, Kowloon World City Park opened in December 1995 and occupies the area of the former Walled City. Some historical artifacts from the Walled City, including its Yamen building and remnants of its southern gate, have been preserved there. And as you alluded to, Kate, and we've already featured it before, but we're kind of revisiting in a different sort of capacity that idea of claustrophobia or just that intense.
Oh, my God. I'm just looking through pictures at the moment and I just am feeling more and more ill.
It is considered and was measured to be the most densely populated place on Earth ever in human history.
Yeah.
Okay.
What would it have smelled like?
Well, let's get back into, because that was just an introduction. There is so much history to this place. Okay. It's really quite fascinating. And the reason why I did that little introduction about genre of film and things like that, it's just like this is a real life example of what
a dystopian environment.
In a really end of the world, no money, developing sort of country life where it's just the strongest survive and everything is cramped.
It reminds me of those sequences in RoboCop, the original RoboCop, when he's going into the apartment building and it is quite densely populated in the apartment building and he's looking for crims and doing whatever RoboCop does. But that's got that real sense of it where you're just like, this doesn't look like a joyous place.
Well, funny you mentioned that because at the end of this story, I've got quite a hefty list of pop culture references that are going to really ring true to you, Kate.
Oh, my God, I can't wait. And we've rattled off so many already. I can't wait to see how many we touched on before we get to that list. Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to shush because I've just been such a little Gabby Gasher. I don't know what a Gabby Gasher is, but that's what I've been. So I'm just going to stop talking.
All right. So let's go back in time a little, folks, because this is a really interesting history to share. So it started out as a military outpost. Now, the history of the Walled City can be traced back to the Song Dynasty, which is 1960 AD to 1279. So we're talking like millennia ago.
Yep.
When a military outpost was set up to manage the salt trade in the area. Little took place for hundreds of years afterward, although 30 guards were stationed there in 1668. A small coastal fort was established at around 1810 after Chinese forces abandoned the Tunglong Fort. In 1842, during the King Emperor's Dai Guan's reign, Hong Kong Island was ceded to Britain by the Treaty of Nanking. And as a result, the Qing authorities felt it necessary to improve the fort to rule the area and check further British influence. The improvements, including the formidable defense wall, were completed in 1847. The Walled City was captured by rebels during the Taiping Rebellion in 1854 before being retaken a few weeks later. And the present Walled City's Dai Pen Association House forms the remnants of what was previously the Lei Unji's garrison. So it is like it has millennia's worth of military sort of value and history. Was used for, this isn't just a little suburb of a city that you go down. The stones that this place was built on is like maybe not Egyptian pyramids type scale of time, but it is old. So
old, quite old as quite balls. Fascinating.
Yes. Now, the Convention for the Extension of Hong Kong Territory of 1898 handed additional parts of Hong Kong, the new territories, to Britain for 99 years. That was the agreement that they signed.
The deal. Okay.
99 years. But what was interesting is that it excluded the walled city, which at the time had a population of roughly 700 people.
Fine, yeah, that's probably nothing. More likely. Yeah, 700 people.
Now, China was allowed, so that was what was interesting about this little pocket and why it continued over time to stay this little pocket of a place, that it was exempt for whatever reason from everything that was happening around it. So it was like a country or a space unto itself.
Okay.
Now, China was allowed to continue to keep officials there as long as they did not interfere with the defense of British Hong Kong. The following year, the governor, Sir Henry Blake, suspected that the Viceroy of Canton was using troops to aid resistance to the new arrangements. So it was like a bit of a strategic place to still have, and they weren't meant to be involved in anything, but who knew what was happening behind the wall.
Yeah.
On the 14th of April, 1899, British forces attacked the walled city, only to find the Viceroy's soldiers gone, leaving behind only the Mandarin and 150 residents. The Qing dynasty ended its rule in 1912, leaving the walled city to the British.
Mm.
Now, though the British claimed ownership of the walled city, they did little with it over the following few decades. They just didn't want anyone to be using it for any sort of strategic, political, or military sort of purpose.
Yeah, okay.
So once they had control of it, they're just like, fuck it, whatever, do what you want.
Just leave it. Let them grow some stuff.
Yeah. Now, the Protestant church established an old people's home in the Old Yamen, which is a Chinese administrative office, that's what that means,
okay,
as well as a school and an almshouse in other former offices. Aside from such institutions, however, the walled city became a mere curiosity for British colonials and tourists to visit. It was labelled a Chinese town in 1915 on the map. So it's kind of like an old historical thing.
Yeah.
Which is a bit insensitive, to be perfectly honest, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not talking a very sensitive age. So that was 1915. In 1933, so a good 18 years later, the Hong Kong authorities announced plans to demolish most of the decaying walled city's buildings, compensating the 436 squatters at the time that lived there with new homes.
Okay.
That same year, in 1933, the nationalist Chinese government protested against the plan and claimed jurisdiction over the city again.
So they're just going to kick them out. They have no new homes.
Well, that's the thing. The British are controlling the area, the Hong Kong area. The Chinese just over the water, claiming that they still own it because of this weird sort of military sort of history and background to it. It was sort of in no man's land almost.
Yeah, yeah.
The nationalist Chinese government continued to make claims on its jurisdiction throughout 35 and 1936 and the first half of 37 until the war between China and Japan started. So we're talking World War II.
Yeah.
So if history's not your thing or geography's not your thing, folks, if you think of the 30s, think of the beginnings of World War II.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Which was bad, I've read.
Yeah, for a lot of people. And by 1940, World War II still going on, only the Yamen, the school, and one house remained. So not a good time.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
During the World War II occupation of Hong Kong, so the Japanese occupying forces demolished the city's wall and used the stone to expand the nearby Kai Tak Airport. Or Kai Tak Airport. Whew. That's a lot of history that we just covered, I'm just saying, by the way.
Guzzle it down.
Now, what happened after World War II? So big shift in the world and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after Japan's surrender, if you didn't know, Japan surrendered in World War II in 1945. China announced its intent to reclaim the walled city. In November 1946, nationalist Chinese officials created the draft outline plan for reinstatement of administration. Catchy title, hey Kate.
Yeah, that's super catchy. They would have workshopped that for a while.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was for just the area, which included an office, schools, police, and other functions. Now, refugees fleeing the Chinese Civil War post-1945 poured into Hong Kong, and 2,000 squatters occupied the walled city by 1947. After a failed attempt to drive them out in 1948, the British adopted a hands-off policy in most matters concerning the walled city.
Mm, too hard basket.
Too hard basket. I was just about to say that. Well done, Kate.
Sorry, got you. We're going to eat each other's brains.
On the 8th of January 1948, the Nationalist Chinese government sent a memorandum to the British ambassador stating, "The Ministry of Foreign Affairs now formally declared to the British Embassy that, in accordance with provisions of the said convention, the Chinese government enjoys jurisdiction over the city of Kowloon and that they have no intention whatsoever of renouncing this jurisdiction." So right. It's a bit of a dick pissing.
I don't want to go to a dick pissing one. Yeah. I would participate in a dick measuring one. But dick pissing could be the second act, which I'll just go and take it. I'll have a wine in the foyer. Just
go to the toilet and you can see that. Now, the British Foreign Office on the 4th of February 1948 considered a variety of solutions, including turning the site into a nationalist Chinese consulate, and ultimately recommended that the British accept the principle of Chinese jurisdiction over Kowloon Walled City, but the Chinese agree not to attempt to exercise that jurisdiction in practice. It's so stupid. It's just like, yeah, we'll say yes, but you don't actually get to do anything.
No. Just pretend.
Yeah. Now, additionally, the British Foreign Office said that a public garden controlled by the municipal authorities of Kowloon Leased Territory offers such a solution, and so would a Chinese consular compound, if the Chinese could first be induced to agree in principle to the appointment of a consul general. It was just a political nightmare.
Yeah, they're just a whole bunch of paper pushing.
Now, in Lung Ping Kwan's book, The City of Darkness, on page 120, he describes, "Here, prostitutes, or what we should call sex workers, installed themselves on the side of the street while a priest preached and handed out powdered milk to the poor on the other. Social workers gave guidance while drug addicts squatted under the stairs getting high. What were children's game centres by day became strip show venues by night. It was a very complex place, difficult to generalise about, a place that seemed frightening, but where most people continued to lead normal lives, a place just like the rest of Hong Kong." Mm. So fascinating.
Yes.
Now, in January 1950, a fire broke out that destroyed over 2,500 huts, home to nearly 3,500 families and 17,000 total people. The disaster highlighted the need for proper fire prevention in the largely wooden-built squatter areas, complicated by the lack of political ties with the colonial and Chinese governments. So it's like this place is in between two governments that are like fighting over who on paper has jurisdiction, but neither of them actually want to
Nobody
do
actually
the job.
Wants it. Yeah, exactly right. So they're just like, guys, can we get some like smoke alarms? And they're like, well, I'll have to talk to the other guys. And then the other guy's like, well, that's still with the other guys, so I really can't give you a Bunnings gift card at this time. But please call back in 6 to 9 months and we will see what we can do.
But if you need to buy any of them, we'll happily sell you to them at an inflated price.
Yeah, much, much more inflated price.
Yeah. Now, the ruins gave new arrivals to the walled city the opportunity to build anew, causing speculation that the fire may have been intentionally set. Kate.
Okay, so they're like, our squatters area isn't the Taj Mahal.
No.
So let's burn that mother to the ground and build a new one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, with no government enforcement from the Chinese or the British aside from a few raids by the Hong Kong police, the walled city became a haven for crime and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It was only during a 1959 trial for a murder that occurred within the walled city that the Hong Kong government was ruled to have jurisdiction there. But by that time, however, the walled city was virtually ruled, and I mean ruled, by organized crime syndicates known as the Triads.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Talk about a place for this to fester and grow. It's like I said, no man's land. No government wants to get involved, doesn't want to do the work. So anything goes.
Yeah. They're like, let's just go and make some money. And it's just the perfect petri dish of, you know, like an environment where they could just do whatever. So it's like, yeah, we rule this town. Buy drugs from us, and we do whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And because the wall had been dismantled to use for the airport, it's not like there's a naturally occurring barrier. This is just, it's a suburb or a block.
People can come and go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, beginning in the 1950s, triad groups such as the 14K and Sun Yi-un gained a stranglehold on the walled city's numerous brothels, gaming parlors, and opium dens. The walled city had become such a haven for criminals that police would venture into it only in large groups.
Mm.
It was not until...
I can't imagine I want to be a police going in there. No. I'd be like, do you know what? You guys, just you do you. I'm going to stay in the squad car, but thank you for inviting me.
Just be nice to each other.
Yeah. Hey, guys, don't yell at each other. That's not nice. Also, you over there with the duffel bag filled with opium, maybe don't sell it to kids.
Yeah.
If you want.
Just don't let us see it.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't until 1973 and 1974 when a series of more than 3,500 police raids resulted in over 2,500 arrests and over 1,800 kilograms, 4,000 pounds, of seized drugs that the triads began to wane, like their power began to wane.
Yeah. Well, if you're taking away their ability to make money through drugs, that's a positive start.
Now, with public support, particularly from younger residents, the continued raids gradually eroded drug use and violent crime. And in 1983, the district police commander declared the walled city's crime rate to be under control.
Okay. That's a positive step.
Absolutely. But I could not imagine what that place was like beforehand.
And we're talking the 70s and 80s. Like, this is we're not talking the 1800s of like absolute Wild West, do whatever. This is a time of like industrial and economic boom. Like, this is not the dark ages.
No. Now, the city also underwent massive construction during the 1960s, with developers building new modular structures above older ones. There's a great photo, folks, in our dump and swipe. Dump and scroll on a Monday, I think it is when we share it, where you get to see this layering effect, not from just from the outside, but from the inside, of seeing new structures built over the top of other structures, built over the top of other structures. It's really quite fascinating.
Now, I'm not a builder, believe it or not, but...
You're kind of related to one, you know.
I am. Actually, yeah, I do. I know a bit about it, but I'm not going to go and build my own home. But even Johnny would be like, I'm not going to build a house on top of this rickety old shack that's made from materials found on the street, because I don't know that that's going to be sustainable for a long period of time. But I guess this is just, you know, I'm no doubt would have just been like, yeah, we got to do this. Let's just slap it on top of the old gear that's already there.
Yep. Interesting fact, while we were there, and you may not know this, but in Hong Kong, you know, whenever a building is getting its facade cleaned, like the outside of a building is getting revamped or being worked on, or as a construction is occurring, you know, builders need to get around the structure to tile it, to brick it, to slap whatever on without being on the actual structure. They build this scaffolding around it. And it's usually a bunch of metal pipes that all interconnect to each other, kind of like Lego pieces or what was that? That other...
Meccano.
It's like Meccano, right? Uh-huh. That goes around a building. In Hong Kong, in their like 80-story buildings, they don't use that. They still use bamboo. Their entire scaffolding structure is 100% made from bamboo. Still.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I guess it's the mentality of like, this is like an age-old tradition.
Yeah.
And it ain't let us down. So why? And I guess as well, materials that are potentially more obtainable in a place like that. And
so cheap.
Cheaper. Yeah.
So light, so sturdy, wow. So strong. And I'm talking like 40 stories up, if someone just needed to like redo a balcony or something, they would just slap on a bit of bamboo, make a little, you know, scaffolding structure and just do their shit and then pull it all back down again. Scary fucking shit.
Yeah. It makes me think of, and this is going to sound really, really culturally insensitive. And so I apologize first and foremost, but it makes me think of that exquisite action sequence in Rush Hour. And I want to say Rush Hour like part 2. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, when Jackie Chan is, you know,
fighting
and like, yeah, the a most incredible like parkour and everything through that. That's what makes me think. I think of that straight away. But
That. And that's how, as bendy as it is, that he can do all those things, it's still strong enough when it's all gritted together to be able to support anything and everything. It's just amazing, in a really cool way.
Yeah.
So World City's going through a massive construction boom. We've just got the, you know, crime rate supposedly and drug rate under control.
Yep. Down and now under
things
control. Yep.
Get absolutely wild. So the city became extremely densely populated and a world unto its own. It was an enclave with over 33,000 people in 300 buildings occupying little more than 7 acres or 2.8 hectares. As a result, the city reached its maximum size by the late 70s and early 80s, and there was a height restriction of 13 to 14 stories, which had been imposed on the city due to the flight path of planes heading toward Kai Tak Airport.
Oh, my God.
As well as limiting building height, the proximity of the airport subjected residents to serious noise pollution.
Yeah.
Probably not their number one concern. I don't think
that's, that's not their number one thing when they're looking at rentals in that area. I'm sure there's a lot of people in Sydney and Melbourne who would just be like, I don't give a shit about the aeroplanes. Put me in a house. I need somewhere to live.
Exactly. What's really interesting from a construction point of view, 8 municipal pipes. 8.
Stop it.
8 municipal pipes provided water to the entire structure.
Those poor pipes. I feel for those pipes. Can we actually welcome the pipes of the Kowloon Walled City into our foyer. Guys, go and take a load off because you've been working overtime. Lizzie will make you a cup of tea and half a scotch finger each. You deserve it.
Howling in the pipes of all the men that attended Mardi Gras. Goodness
gracious to me. I've been to parties where there's been more than 8 pipes in the living room.
Absolutely. So only 8 pipes were, you know, used to service.
Trying the very best to pump water through this place.
Now, there is speculation that there could have been water could have been coming from internal wells or anything that were inside, but that's really hard to know.
Yeah, and even that, like I can't imagine that's going to be particularly efficient. Just imagine the shower pressure.
Oof.
30,000 people at 7 a.m. on 8 pipes worth of trickle of water. Blech.
Now, a few of the streets were illuminated by fluorescent lights as sunlight rarely reached the lower levels due to the outstanding disregard to air rights within the city. So, again, look at the photos on Monday for the
dump and scroll.
Dump and scroll. Why can't that's I remember? Okay. I fucking do it.
No, that's okay. It's why we're a duo. We just lift each other up when we're down.
Thank you for filling my 5 stars. looking at the photos of it, folks, like you're walking down what would not be a normal alleyway in this structure. You don't know if it's day or night.
Like, that would be horrendous.
And now, although the rampant crime rate of earlier decades diminished, in later years, the walled city was still known for its high number of unlicensed doctors and dentists who could operate there without threat of prosecution.
Hmm.
That is a little hint into my next story, which I will just leave there.
Yes, please.
Although the walled city was for many years a hotbed of criminal activity, most residents were not involved in any crime and lived peacefully within its walls. Numerous small factories and businesses thrived inside the walled city, and some residents formed groups to organize and improve daily life. An attempt by the government in 1963 to demolish some shacks in a corner of the city gave rise to the Anti-Demolition Committee.
ADC.
Yeah, this committee served as the basis for a Kowfong association. Charities, religious societies, and other welfare groups were gradually introduced to the city, while medical clinics and schools went unregulated. The Hong Kong government provided some services such as the water supply and mail delivery. Barely water supply.
Lucky they were still getting some mail, yeah.
Our fun fact for this week, Kate, is also about the postal system that occurred there. So you better check that out on Wednesday, I think it comes out. Now, what was the fate of Kowloon? The quality of life in the city, sanitary conditions in particular, remained far behind the rest of Hong Kong. The Sino-British Joint Declaration in 1984 laid the groundwork for the city's demolition. The mutual decision by the two governments to tear down the walled city was announced on the 14th of January 1987. On the 10th of March 1987, following the announcement that the walled city would be converted to a park, the Secretary for District Administration formally requested the Urban Council to take over the site following the demolition. So there's still this like, well, we know what we want it to be, but who's going to do the work?
Yeah, and who's going to foot the bill, yeah.
Owing to the presence of numerous other green spaces in the area, the Urban Services Department doubted the need for yet another park. Now, even though Hong Kong is like, I'm talking so densely populated, yeah. It is concrete jungle. They have done an amazing job at preserving greenery. Like trees literally grow out the side of a skyscraper and you don't even know how it does it.
Yeah.
But there's like a full-on fucking urban garden tree.
Yeah.
Somehow growing out of the concrete of a building. And you're like, how does that work? But it does.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I told you all about that. So the government distributed some 2.7 billion or 350 million US dollars in compensation to the estimated 33,000 residents and businesses in a plan devised by a special committee of the Hong Kong Housing Authority. Some residents were not satisfied with the compensation and were forcibly evicted between November 91 and July 92. So we're talking like this took years and years to even get moving.
Yeah.
While it was deserted, the empty city was used to film a scene in the 1993 movie Crime Story.
Okay.
That's just one of the pop culture references. Okay, I can't wait. We'll get
to that.
Now, after 4 months of planning, demolition of the walled city began on the 23rd of March 1993 and concluded in April 1994. And then construction work on Kowloon Walled City Park started the following month. So, Kate, what is it currently like now? And what did I see when I visited?
Yep, I want to know. Mm-hmm. Tell me, please.
Now, the area where the Walled City once stood is now Kowloon Walled City Park, adjacent to Carpenter Road Park. So, because Hong Kong was colonized, governed, whatever, you know, China, Japan, British, blah, blah, blah. The order of it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of roads there that are, you know, in English, like there's Hollywood Boulevard, there's so and so, and then the next road is something else. So it's quite a mishmash of cultures. The 31,000 meter squared or 7.7 acres park was completed in August 1995 and handed over to the Urban Council. It was opened officially by Governor Chris Patten a few months later on the 22nd of December. And construction of the park cost a total of 76 million Hong Kong dollars.
Okay. So just super quick, the 330 million was to pay for the people to get out of there. So to give them money to go and live somewhere else.
Somewhere else.
And then if they complained about how much they were getting, they were just evicted anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you better just take the bloody offer.
Yeah.
Now, the park's design is modelled on Jianyang Gardens of the early Qing Dynasty. It is divided into eight landscape features with the fully restored Yamen as its centrepiece.
Mm-hmm.
The park's paths and pavilions are named after streets and buildings in the walled city. Artifacts from the walled city, such as five inscribed stones and three old wells, are also on display in the park. The park was designed by the Architectural Services Department, which won a prestigious award from the Central Society of Horticulture of Germany for the redevelopment. So there's lots of stuff in there. There's floral walks, there's a chess garden, there's a garden of the Chinese zodiac, there's a garden of the four seasons, there's an arts terrace, there's a pavilion and a moon gate, and like so there's lots
lot
of stuff in there.
Yeah, they've put a lot into it.
Yeah, it's not a, this wasn't
it's not
like,
just
a,
like a tree
afterthought.
Yeah, and like a swing set.
Yeah. The Antiquities and Monuments Office conducted an archaeological examination as the walled city was being demolished and several cultural remains were discovered. Among them were the walled city's Yamen and remnants of its south gate, which were officially designated and declared monuments of Hong Kong on the 4th of April 1996. Okay. So remember, like back to the year 960, millennia ago, this place really did have a lot of significant archaeological and historical sort of value
artifacts
or
and value.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
So you got to give them, I'm sure a lot of dodgy shit happened.
Sure. But yeah, but you do have to give them a little bit of credit for saving those items. And for
they didn't let like the Hilton come in and build a big fucking hotel over the top of it and all
That's
of
right.
this just
or
get
fucking Trump
away.
Tower or some shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The South Gate had originally served as the walled city's main entrance. Along with its foundation and other remains included two stone plaques inscribed with South Gate and Kowloon Walled City from the South Gate and a flagstone path that had led up to it. The foundations of the city's wall and East Gate were also discovered, and the Hong Kong government preserved the South Gate remnants next to a square in front of the Yamen. Or Yamen. Yamen?
Yamen!
The Yamen building is made up of three walls. Originally, the middle hall served the assistant magistrate of Kowloon's administrative office, and the rear block was his residence. After the government officials left the area in 1899, it was used for several other purposes, including an old people's home, a refuge for widows and orphans, a school, and a clinic. It was restored in 1996 and is now found near the centre of the park, and it contains a photo gallery of the walled city and two cannons dating back to 1802 sit at the side of its entrance. Okay, what else should I go into? There's just so much to share, like the alleyways,
what was your,
the construction.
Tell me, so you went there?
Yeah, so I got to go to see the park. So it's like you don't get to see anything of what's left of what the actual buildings and the structures and how they lived is like.
No,
it's pretty different.
But was the park pretty phenomenal? Like your own personal
impression?
Did you just, were you there for a whole day? Like, what are we talking, scale size? Like, what's?
I didn't know. You know, it wasn't a whole day thing. Like, you could do it in like 2-3 hours type thing.
Okay. Yeah,
know,
right.
It depends if you want to read everything about it. But it's just, it's a nice, pretty park. Like, you know, and I'm a fast walker.
Yeah, of course, of course. Our family has a big thing about clocking Google, where Google says it'll be, you know, a 57-minute walk. We go, don't be absurd. That sounds like a 25-minuter. And we'll be absolutely clocking up a sweat. Let's do it. Let's clock Google.
So, yeah, it's really interesting. And, like, there's a lot of information about how people lived.
Yeah.
How did they dry their clothes? How did they cook? All that sort of stuff. And I mean, I could go into it, but we're running out a bit of time, and sure. There's photos on the Dump and Scroll where you get to see like someone cooking in the alleyways and see the postman delivering stuff and seeing kids play. It's really quite fascinating.
Yeah.
For the mathematicians out there, if you're at all interested, there was a survey done in 1987 of the people that lived there. How accurate this is, anybody's guess.
Sure.
But based on this survey, the walled city had a population density, so not the number of actual people, but the
density, the ratio, like a per square meter type situation,
of approximately 1,255,000 inhabitants per square kilometer.
You're joking.
Or if you need it in miles, that is 3.2 million people per square mile.
Dense.
Yeah.
That is a fear of mine.
Yeah.
I don't want to live there.
Everyone, I think, no matter what your education or your understanding of math is, you think of a kilometer or you think of a mile squared, a box of mile by mile by mile by mile, whatever, that had, for miles, 3.2 million people living in that mile.
Wow.
And 1.2.
Holy moly. No thanks.
Yeah. So,
can you tell us about some of your, I was just going to say, I want to hear some of these pop cultures because I swear I've got so many pictures running through my brain, but I don't want to, I'm not trying to rush you. I'm just, that's an exciting part for me.
I want it. No, look, I mean, I think we've gotten through the most of it, but you know, I've got a bit on the culture. I've got a bit on, you know, the demography. I've got a bit on everything. But let's just get to some cultural stuff because we're already at 55 minutes. So.
Oh, my God. Time flies when you're having fun. I just want to hear them because it just makes me think. I want to know what you got.
Well, it's classic us as well. Now, in Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Supremacy on page 149, the walled city of Kowloon has no visible wall around it, but it is as clearly defined as if there were one made of hard, high steel. It is instantly sensed by the congested open market that runs along the street in front of the row of dark, run-down flats. Shacks, haphazardly perch on top of one another, giving the impression that at any moment the entire blighted complex will collapse under its own weight, leaving nothing but rubble where elevated rubble had stood.
Oh, good writer. Robert Ludlum. I think, I think he can write. I think he might have something there.
Now, many authors, filmmakers, game designers, and visual artists have used the walled city to convey a sense of oppressive urbanization or unfettered criminality. In literature, Robert Ludlum's novel, The Bourne Supremacy, uses the walled city as one of its settings. Mm-hmm. So just in the book, I don't think it was used in the films.
Yeah.
The city appears as a virtual reality environment, described by Stephen Poole as an oasis of political and creative freedom in William Gibson's Bridge trilogy, and as a contrast with Singapore in his Wired article, Disneyland with the Death Penalty. And in the manga Crying Freeman, the titular character's wife travels to the walled city to master her swordsmanship and control a cursed sword.
Okay.
You
can't help but have that by looking at the pictures. You're just like, I've seen this in something. Like I've seen this in a game, or I've read it in a book and I'm picturing it, or I've seen it, in a movie.
Yeah. In 1982, Shaw Brothers' film Brothers from the Walled City is set in Kowloon. The 1984 gangster film Long Arm of the Law features the walled city as a refuge for gang members before they were gunned down by police. And in this week's pop culture reference, in the 1988 film Bloodsport, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, the walled city is the setting for a martial arts tournament.
Oh, okay.
So do you remember that whole thing? It's set, or supposedly set, in
the walled city. Mm. Well, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, God. In the 1990s.
Oh, sorry, everyone.
That was cheap.
That was so bad. That was such a cheap shot. We can delete that.
It took me a while to even register it.
Oh my God. Sorry, everyone.
The 1992 non-narrative film Baraka features several highly detailed shots of the walled city shortly before its demolition. And the 1993 film Crime Story, which we mentioned earlier, starring Jackie Chan, was partly filmed in the deserted walled city and includes real scenes of building explosions that occurred there.
Okay.
This one, maybe for those that are born after the 90s.
Okay.
A walled neighborhood called the Narrows in the 2005 film Batman Begins was inspired by the walled city.
Ah.
We should all know that reference.
We should, yeah. Wait, is that the Nipples Batman?
The Nipples Batman?
Or the cat, the Keaton Batman? Which Batman?
This is Christian Bale, the first of the Nolan series.
Sorry, I got stuck in the 90s again. Oh, classic me.
And Scarecrow was going to use the aerosol in the most densely populated part of Gotham City.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Narrows was based off of.
Based on that. Oh, cool. Yeah.
The 2006 Hong Kong horror film Recycle features a decrepit, nightmarish version of the walled city, complete with the tortured souls from which the protagonist must flee.
Yeah, that's not on my list.
No. And the 2016 TVB martial arts drama A Fist Within Four Walls takes place in the triad-ridden walled city in the early 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
There's books, there's video games, and there's even, to finish us off, folks, a partial recreation of the Kowloon Walled City existed in the Warehouse Kawasaki, an amusement arcade that operated from 2009 to 2019 in the Japanese suburb of Kawasaki, Kangawa. The atmosphere of the Walled City was reflected in the arcade's narrow corridors, electrical wires, pipes, post boxes, signboards, neon lights, frayed posters, and various other small touches. And that, folks, is the end of the City of Anarchy story.
Yay! Thank you so much, Dom. I loved that story.
Not too dark for me.
No, but I liked it. And it does. It touches on those like fears and the just like that complete sense of claustrophobia and just, yeah, I can't imagine that my ensuite would have good water pressure, which is a massive fear of mine. Like, it's too much.
Yeah. Interesting, right?
So, absolutely. And then again, with that tie-in that you traveled there recently and, you know, saw the park and the, you know, you were there. You were at the place.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I love seeing and hearing about that sort of stuff. And so it was quite an interesting thing, quite a bit of history. There's so much that you can see. Go look up photos, check out our Dump and Scrolls and our fun facts for the week. And also don't forget to check out Certainly Strange from the BooPod Network and give us 5 stars.
5 stars, baby. Guys, thank you so much for listening. And Dom, thank you so much for that story, you absolute legend. And for your free therapy earlier, I'm already feeling better.
Yes.
Love you so much.
Kate's back next week, hopefully, or yes. I'll do another story if you need.
No, absolutely. I will be back and I'm going to be touching on, I think, when I was like in a previous life, I had something to do with the mafia.
Okay.
Because of my like, I'm just really into it and I'm really, you know, I think that is. So I'm going to, that's the thing. So I'm going to do a little story relating to the American Italian mafioso.
Bring it on. Ready for it.
Oh yeah. Let's do it.
All right, folks. See you next week.
See you next week. Love you.
Bye.
Bye. That's a wrap. Big shout out to everyone for tuning in to Shit and Bricks.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. Plus, you can find extra little nuggets on our socials.
Next week, we'll be back talking more shit, so do not forget to tune in.
And remember to wipe, flush, and wash your hands. Goodbye.
Goodbye.